Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What's up, everybody? Happy March Madness to you. Hopefully the fact that Tar Heels are not participating in March Madness has been dulled a little bit, and you've actually been able to enjoy some of the games this week. This is the Coast to Coast podcast on InsideCarolina.com. I am Joey Powell. We are brought to you by Johnny T-Shirt and JohnnyT-Shirt.com. All right. Thank y'all for being here. However you're consuming the show, stop, rate, review us. We haven't had any reviews or ratings lately, so we would really appreciate the five-star love from you guys. If you're not subscribed to the show, I'm not sure why you wouldn't be, but go ahead and beat that subscribe button down. I make sure you're getting all this content sent to you automatically on whichever platform you consume the show, whether it be on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever. We love that you're listening to us. We love that you're picking up what we're putting down, and we hope that you can get it automatically. As I said before, I'm Joey Powell, Inside Carolina's Coast to Coast podcast. The two guys that you want to hear from are with me as always, Sean Moran, Sherelle McMillan. Boys, thanks for being here. I appreciate you guys jumping right in after the Elite Eight has completed. We now have a Final Four.
After right? The ACC representing in terms of their strength.
You can give me all of this, Joe Lunardi, every Big 12 team is a quad one. The SEC is the most elite conference ever. The Big 10 needs every school to get in the big dance. None of them have made the Final Four, but the little old, startup, plucky ACC sends veteran, longtime member, and basketball powerhouse Miami to Houston. All right, some of that I feel real about. Some of that's tongue-in-cheek, but yes, Sean, you're correct. Boys, as we sat here and saw these games, and I want to go all the way back to the round of eight, not just the Final Four of FAU and UConn and Miami and SDSU that are still standing. I want to talk about the eight themselves, because what we've seen over these last few days of teams playing are some pretty obvious themes to me. I want to share these themes with you guys and have you guys elaborate a little bit and tell me how you feel that's played out. What I'm seeing are four teams that are old, are very experienced, and have a serious amount of toughness, regardless of how you want to shape that. And they all also have a certain amount of transfers making heavy impact on the games. And that's not just the four that advanced this weekend. Also with Kansas State and with Houston and with Creighton and some of these other teams, they all fit that bill too. So with that said, Sean, I'll come to you first because you're farthest away from me. What's your reaction to that? How do you feel about that? And what does it say to you about the current college basketball landscape?
Well, I think we all know the college basketball landscape has completely changed. It's showing itself out right now with a lot of the transfers, whether it's Miami or some of the Kansas State, what we saw. But in terms of what we're seeing on the floor. You're seeing, go back to the first day of Michigan State versus Kansas State, which was, I didn't have it as one of the best games of the tournament, but it certainly proved out that way. And you have point guards. I mean, Marquise, Noel, his vision was just incredible watching that and what that can do for a team. But you really have five, for the most part, four to five offensive threats. You have guys that can hit shots and are hitting shots from the outside. That went from the Kansas State, Michigan State game where they were shooting 40 to 50% from three, hitting big shots. you know, even to the just now the Miami Texas game where Texas was hitting the shots in the first half, they cooled down, and Miami, you know, I think such a fun team to watch with some of the athletes they have, but also the skill sets with Isaiah Wong, et cetera. And they can create for themselves, but they shoot at a high percentage. And then you have Omir, who knows his role and does it so effectively. So you really have just five guys plus bench guys playing in sync. And we didn't, you know, you can add UConn and everybody else who we just saw. So, you know, part of me wishes UNC had made it, because I still think they could have done some damage. But at the same time, you just look at the numbers and what their strengths and weaknesses were. And, you know, you have teams that are just playing at a much higher level and much more competent shooting the ball.
We have talked many times on this podcast about our collective love, at least my love for dogs. And I don't mean Spuds McKenzie. I don't mean, you know, Clifford the Big Red. I mean dudes that will rather run through you to win than to breathe. Sherrell, I want to ask you same question. What's your immediate takeaway from seeing the construction and the makeup of these teams that have advanced to Houston?
I think it is a more pronounced version of what we've been seeing in the past. If you look at national champions since 2015, when Duke won with Jahlil Okafor and Tyus Jones and Justice Winslow, 3-1 and done freshmen, it's been all upperclassmen experienced teams: Villanova, UNC, Villanova, UVA, COVID year, Baylor, and Kansas. All those teams had, you know, depth and experience, and they were older, to your point. So I think what we're seeing now is teams are doubling down because they have guys who can play that fifth year. So there's a lot of COVID year guys who are back, guys on their second and third teams, to your point, who are back. And I think they've learned the importance of all this, that I guess it's not promised because they're under a third stop, or maybe they've been hardened more than others have who have only played at one school. But to your point, I think all that is what we're seeing. It's just kind of more intense because of the COVID year. San Diego State, we joked offline that, you know, it's a bunch of 26-year-old guys just playing ball who've been together for 12 years, like a national team, like a traveling AU team that went to college together.
Primetime players, San Diego.
Yeah. FAU, combination of those transfers and experienced guys. Same thing with Miami, transfers and experienced guys. And then UConn is a really interesting blend of nailing the COVID class. They got Sanogo and Jordan Hawkins in the COVID class, which is amazing considering what most people got. They have a couple of transfers, and then they have a couple of talented freshmen. So it's a good blend. But I don't know, man. It's interesting to me too, because there are a lot of players who played at lower levels, and this is hopefully taking the conversation towards UNC, who people might have looked at their stats at that lower level and said, oh, he can't play in the Big East, or he can't play in the Mountain West, or he can't play in the ACC. And not only have they performed in March, but they've been among the best players in March and now as we head into April. So I think it is it should be exciting for Carolina fans, just because you can rebuild in a year. This really is different, as we've said so many times before, than it used to be. You can completely change your team and identity just in a few months, really, from March until September when practice starts.
Thank you. This is kind of what I'm hoping to get to, I guess, to folks who are still kind of stuck on not feeling really great about the new transfer, I guess, feel in the new landscape. I understand that old habits can die hard, but I'm hoping that folks can recognize what has happened in this Final Four shows what can happen if you play the transfer portal recruiting and play your high school recruiting properly. And so we talk about some recruiting. We talk about, you know, who North Carolina is going after in the portal. They got two pretty big recruits this past week, in the sense that Armando Bacot and RJ Davis have announced they're going to be returning to school. Why is that important? Well, think about everything we just said about older guys, experienced guys. But also, if you had to tell me to name two of the guys on the roster from North Carolina last year that had some toughness, it's probably these two players in Bacot and Davis. So, Sherrell, share a little bit about why those guys returning may help, I guess, shape North Carolina into some of the results that we're seeing in this year's Final Four.
Well, I think in my opinion, the two most important positions in the game really are your big and your point guard. I think some people might push back on that and say, you know, really talented wings are the most important, but I'll go with point guard and big still. So the fact that you have those two wrapped up, one who is an All-American, another who has played at times over stretches for 10 or 15 games, like, you know, first team All-ACC performer, that is attractive when you go into the portal, as we've said, again, numerous times, to have those pieces already there. Then you can really be selective in how you want to fill out the rest of the roster. And you can, again, I know people don't like it. It is free agency. It's what it is. So you can look at those two pieces and say, okay, how can I build next year's team to the best of my ability around these two guys? And so I would think that you want to add athleticism, as we talked about, and you want to add shooting around these two guys, because Armando Bacot is going to get double teamed a lot. And if he doesn't get double teamed, then he's going to score a lot. And if he does, you need to have someone who can knock down open shots. So you say, naturally, need shooters. So they've started to look at shooters. And then you think about the defensive prowess that they will lose from Leaky Black being gone. You want to make some of that up with athleticism at the wing. And so I think they're kind of looking at that. So it is free agency, and it is how can I construct this team for this particular season to be the best that it can possibly be. And having those two pieces back makes it very easy to kind of fill in around.
Sean, what can those two guys do to improve themselves before next season from a player performance and a skill set level? Because I think one of the things that we saw this year was, injuries aside, right? We know Bacot played most of the year hurt, and we know that RJ Davis was not the same after being injured against Syracuse. But what can those two guys do that really nobody on the team did a great job of last year in making an individual improvement from the prior season to this season?
Yeah, well, you know, let's start with Armando, who I think we talked about it, where he, out of all the players, probably at least maintained what he had done the year before. But, you know, I think even just was watching the UCLA UNC highlights of the other day, and just watching some of the ball movement and how he was looking, it still seemed night and day almost. So in terms of, you know, whether this happens or not, but would love to see just the ability to hit a 10 to 12 foot. A jump shot. I think we saw him sophomore year knock down a handful of 16 to 18 foot ones. But even if you're just able to face up, you know, it doesn't have to be like Jalen Washington, but if he has that ability, then it's much harder for the double teams to come, you know, when he's trying to back you down, and it just opens things up. I think for him coming back, he most likely, you know, his goal is probably to win ACC Player of the Year, given how close he's been the last 2 years. And that can eliminate some of those games where maybe it is a 7 foot defender or somebody tall and athletic or double teams that he's struggled with. And then at the same time, I think Sherrell put it in one of his scoops, but the quote he had, you know, from the Charleston game of, you know, being a janitor and kind of really going hard, being able to run the floor. We saw it, you know, sparringly in the middle of the year, and that got him some easy baskets, but we barely saw it over the whole year. And you know, injuries happen, and they're a part of the game, but I think coming in better shape and a little stronger, little more light on his feet, I think can help Armando from a RJ's perspective. Before that Syracuse game, he was playing lights out in the ACC from a shooting perspective. I think the issue with him, you know, is just the size and stature, where teams will try to target him on crucial opportunities if games are tight, which makes it hard if that's one of your leaders. But, you know, I love his ability to defensive rebound at 5'10 or whatever height he's actually coming in at. But once again, seeing how a lot of these teams have been playing, one of the biggest issues was that assist to field goal percentage, field goals made this year. And it's that vision, which watching him in transition just couldn't frustrate me more this past year, unless it was earlier and Seth Trimble had gotten out. But just the lack of, you know, have we seen him throw alley-oop? I can't remember maybe when the last time that happened. So I think just given he's coming back, he needs to be able to, I think, do a little better job controlling the team and getting other guys shots. We know he can get good shots. We know he can make them, but almost returning to the sophomore year from a shooting perspective and making sure others are involved and he's getting others easier looks.
One of the ways that North Carolina's program has always helped its players improve from year to year have been the notorious player pickup sessions that happened over the course of the summer. And it's been something as long as I can remember where you've had former pros, current pros, and current players all absolutely just going after each other during the summer, whether it be camp weeks or not. There's just a plethora of chances for the guys to go against real good competition. And the games get heated. We've heard stories about certain players, you know, injuring other players, going through each other's chests, those sorts of things, and just toughening players of the program up. So I want to go back to what we said earlier about seeing the Final Four now showing teams that have a lot of toughness and a lot of experience, kind of carrying that over to last year's team coming into this year. And I want to pull a quote from two faves of the modern era, at least in our lifetimes, of North Carolina basketball, Vince Carter and Antoine Jameson. Antoine was on Vince's The VC Show, which is Vince's podcast video show that he does on a regular basis. And they asked, you know, they were talking to Antoine and Vince were sharing some stories about what they felt like happened with this team. Jameson said he felt like it was NIL. That was his instant response. And while I don't necessarily agree with that as the only reason, sure, you can say it was part of the reason because it was a new variable. But the big thing, I think, and this is what jumped out at me in his reply, was he was talking about that the 2022 and 23 Tar Heels did not have a, quote, feel for the game. And he was shocked at their practice schedule during one of his trips to campus when he came and played ball with them. So I'm going to read a quote from this, and shout out to Grant Hughes for pulling this for IC. Quote, the feel for the game is not there. Vince, remember all the open runs that we had. I went to Chapel Hill the first day they were able to play pickup. They played that day, and I told the team, I'll see you tomorrow. You're going to play tomorrow, right? They being this year's team, said, nah, we were scheduled to play next week. I was like, huh? And so it shows maybe a difference in now versus the regularity with which those pickup games and those very heated pickup games were going on. Sherelle, I want to ask you, do you feel like there's something to that and maybe the change in whether it's real or perceived toughness of the current squad and can having more of those competitions, can that actually make this team better from year to year?
I don't think it can hurt to have more of those competitions. I think when you have a team like North Carolina who was finished on an amazing run and then is preseason number one and things don't go right, you try to find every possible explanation or solution when it just doesn't make sense. And I'm not going to tell you exactly the reason because I don't think I know.
Nobody does, man. It's all right.
Yeah, but the simplest explanation does tend to be the right one. And this one doesn't seem that simple to me. Again, all due respect to Antoine Jameson and Vince Carter, who know more basketball than I ever will, forgotten, whatever cliche you want to use. But I kind of disagree with them. The competition wouldn't have hurt, but I don't see how that's a reason for what happened during the season. I think you have to look at more basketball-focused stuff, like the fact that they shot 31% from three and that there were a lot of missed open shots and that Armando Bacot wasn't healthy the whole season and that, you know, Caleb Lowe wasn't as efficient as he wanted to be and that Pete Nance didn't have the season he wanted. I think it's more so those things, and I think everyone still and for a while will kind of grasp at anything and say, oh, that makes sense. That's a reason. So I don't think he's wrong, but I don't think he's right either.
It would also be tough to prove, but you know, again, when this guy speaks, he does have his name in the front row of you know, retired jerseys. I think that matters. Sean, what's your reaction to what Antoine said?
Definitely have a few thoughts because the past few days, I know there was a thread on it on the premium message boards, but the premium archive message boards are a great black hole that are fun to go down. Usually I do it during live recruiting periods and especially as guys are becoming juniors, seniors, just kind of remembering who else UNC was watching at that time or how. So some of those guys came to get to UNC.
Especially when you have a 3-month-old or 2.5-month-old. Right?
I was going to say that screams of a guy. Yeah, that screams of a guy that's up at 2 a.m. for a feeding and has nothing else to do. But go ahead.
Yeah, that's exactly how it transpired. I think from two to three the other day. So I actually ended up going to the pickup game reports, and you know, I know these are a thing. I love reading them in terms of what happened. But I'd say over the years, I'll read them. Don't really pay that much, you know, that much attention to how the games actually went. But if you go back and read both pickup game report one and pickup game report two, it actually, I mean, all the warning signs were there, which were brought up. But
wait. I want to point out that on this day of our Lord, March the 26th, Sean is now saying the signs were there on the pickup game reports of the summer. I love you for that, dude. Go ahead.
All right. So just here, pickup game number one, they got absolutely blasted. And one thing there, you know, I don't know the answer to this. Maybe Sherelle does, but a lot of the guys you see coming back, obviously great Tar Heels are playing at the highest levels of overseas basketball, which is extremely competitive. Marcus Paige, Luke May, et cetera. But you go down that list and you don't have NBA guys playing. You don't have Kobe. You don't have Henson, Barnes. Like, they weren't there. You had Justin Jackson and Theo Pinson in the second one. But once again, Theo's playing for the Mavericks, but he's not really getting any playing time. So you don't have the guys that are getting those minutes. It would be great to see some of them come back in the future, but I don't know what the relationship is, anything like that. So getting back to on the court, first game they get blasted. One anomaly was Dontre Styles going crazy, hitting 4 threes. But you had Armando play limited minutes, whether that was injury or whatever it was. He played limited minutes, gave most of them to Shaver, I think had 4 points. You had Leaky Black not playing, whether that was injury. So right there you have, you know, two guys not playing, they get blasted. I feel like it was 04 or maybe Roy's first year or second year. The current team got blasted and there was they were called in or there was something that happened and they played much better the second time. This time around it was much closer the second game, but you had Caleb Love had a horrible shooting day. They weren't getting it inside. The guards were struggling to penetrate. And a lot when you read through the report, there's a lot of issues that came to surface. So I think that all goes to what Jameson and Carter were saying. And I don't think it was really NIL. I think it was just the run they went on. Most teams, how they lost, giving up the 15-point lead, having a chance to get a rebound, would put that desire or that burn in you. But having that 3-week run was so amazing that they were pretty much celebrated as if they did win it. And I think they were fat and happy throughout the summer, which makes it hard to have that competitive desire. So I'm hoping with what happened this year, the pickup games are a lot different. There's a lot more competition. And I'm going to be paying a lot closer attention to the reports this year than I have in the past. You know, and it's funny to read some of the comments of hey, if they had hit a few more threes, it would have been different. That's what we were saying all year. You know, so it was a good black hole to go down, but I'm going to be much more interested this year than I have been in the past.
Trill, you got stories about going down the archived thread wormhole that Sean's been down?
I'll give you one. It has nothing to do with this, but it talks about a baby. So this is almost 6 years ago when UNC was recruiting Cam Johnson, and I was emailing with the Pittsburgh SID, trying to get information, trying to get a statement, trying to figure out what was going on. And it haunts me to this day because he sent me an email at like 4 p.m. and I didn't see it until like 2 a.m. when I was up during a feeding. And so at 2 a.m. I'm on IC typing up that here's the statement from Pittsburgh, and I misspelled the SID's name, and he used to work at Duke, and I couldn't change it. Because Jay Billis screenshotted it and it went out to the internet, and I've always felt bad for that. So that's my 2 a.m. premium black hole story. But Sean, I think your point was really good about maybe about getting fat and happy. I think maybe Jameson chose NIL because that's like the thing now. But maybe what he was trying to say, and forgive me if I'm putting his words in his mouth, is that, you know, they were a little fat and happy, and they really enjoyed that 3-week run and everything that it brought them. And he's definitely not the only one who said that. I was talking to a parent of someone on the team last year, and he was like, I just don't know if they understood what the assignment was. I know that's a cliche now that people use, but he was like, was it running it back? Was it, you know, trying to do what they did the last 21 games? Was it trying to run back the whole season? Cause the season was not great, you know, as a whole. So I think maybe the idea of run it back was like, okay, we'll run it back. And they didn't understand the depths that they were going to have to go to really get back there. If you listen to Justin Jackson talk about after the Villanova loss and what him and Kenny and Luke May did as far as shooting and stuff, you listen to Raymond Felton when he talks about after they lost to Santa Clara and the practices before Maui and how they vowed it would never happen again. You just listen to those guys, and it's very different as far as like title game losses and losses to end the season, fueling the team the next year than what happened with this particular team. So I think maybe that's what Jamison was trying to capture, and he just said NIL because that's what you say now.
Well, it's also it's a difference from when he played. It's a major difference from when he played. So it's easy to see that and wonder what did it do to create a different circumstance than what happened last time. Sherrill, something you just tapped into and I think is really key is that if this team did not understand what they were doing in 2021-22 to get to the championship game, then obviously it would make sense that it would be hard for them to replicate it. If they could not understand in the moment what they were doing differently, then yeah, it's going to be hard for them to go back to that well. So it echoes kind of what you said, talking to a player's parent, and it echoes some of the things that we've heard, both on and off the record, former players that we've talked to and what they've said about just being absolutely flabbergasted at the energy and the effort and the detail attentiveness from this team this year. Sean?
So I think coming from that, the question stems, okay, if now you saw what happened last year, you have Armando and RJ coming back, are they going to be the leaders? I think there was a lot of questions on where was the leadership this year. Some people do it, you know, some people do it by example. Other people are the rah-rah in your face type of guys, but who's going to be the one calling everybody together, getting them in the gym? Who's going to be the one, you know, organizing things to make sure what happened this year didn't happen? You know, can it be RJ or Armando? I hope so, but I think the question is it them is one. And then at the same time, you know, from the coaching staff, if you're hearing, like, if Vince Carter and Antoine Jamison are telling you, hey, why aren't these guys playing? It's also on them to, you know, have to establish some of that authority and some of those boundaries and acceptable practices. So I'm hoping with what happened, there've been quotes from Coach Davis to Bubba, you know, everybody taking a look in the mirror and hopefully everybody is doing their part to make things better coming very, very soon.
Last thing on this, Michelle Hillison, who is like all everything at IC, been around for a long time. You might not know her, but she does everything to keep IC together.
And we love her.
We do. She made a point in the IC Slack. She was like, it's kind of interesting that this year, last year was a ton of fanfare, rightfully so, with videos and very produced, I'm coming back, you know, run it back, return. This year we have a tweet from RJ Davis, which is like 9 characters. Mm-hmm. And we have Armando Bacot talking to Jeff Goodman saying, I'm coming back. Of the announced returns, like kind of the higher profile ones. Even some of the ones that haven't been higher profile, just been, you know, retweets or tweets or likes or something like that. There's not the show that was last year. So maybe that is already showing a little bit of look in the mirror and understanding of what, to quote that parent, the assignment is this time.
I think one of the things that may explain why this team wasn't scrimmaging so much during the summer as when Vince and Anton were here, is I'm going to guess they were at Johnny T-shirt shopping. if you look at the different things that can lure you and distract you during the summertime in Chapel Hill, strolling down East Franklin Street into the little portal there, an Into Johnny t-shirt is certainly tops of that list, right? Like there's some other things in there, like maybe a dog at the drugstore across the street, you know, maybe you stop over on the quad and take your photo under the Davy Poplar, whatever. But going to Johnny t-shirt is definitely tops of that list. And I would guess that after filling their bag of burritos next door and then rolling into Johnny t-shirt, they're filling their bag of goodies from Johnny T, because Johnny t-shirt has all of the best brands of Carolina swag that you can imagine. That goes from Columbia to Nike to Jordan Brand to Cutter and Buck, every single sport that you can think of. You know, if North Carolina had a bass fishing team, if that was a real thing, Johnny t-shirt would have shirts for those. I mean, bass fishing is not a real sport for college. And as somebody who's fished before my life, I can say that, but it's not a college sport. But if it was, Johnny t-shirt would have shirts for it. Just want you guys to take care of Johnny t-shirt. Go by and see him on East Franklin Street in Chapel Hill, johnnytshirt.com. If you're a premium IC subscriber, get the code off the message boards, apply that to your purchase. It's an extra 10% off the top of your order. Save money. Thank Johnny t-shirt. They're great people, locally alumni owned and operated. Great folks. We love what they do for Inside Carolina. We want you guys to love them the same. Take a quick break. Let the national guys drop some ads. We're going to come back in and talk actual UNC portal stuff right when we get back. Stick around on the Coast to Coast podcast.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right. Thank you guys for being a part of the show tonight. Coast to Coast podcast from insidecarolina.com. I'm Joey Powell. With me, as always, Sherelle McMillan, Sean Moran. Sherelle, we've talked as much about kind of what North Carolina is looking for in the portal. Man, I know you've been burning the midnight oil. Sean's been watching video. Sherelle's, he's cheesing. He must've just gotten some news or something, but he's got that ish eating grin on his face, like he just discovered something. I know you've been working hard, man, and I know Sean's been watching all sorts of tape so that we can give great analysis for these guys when they pop on UNC's radar for their portal needs. So, Sherelle, you want to give us some news about Mr. Timberlake from Towson? We broke him down a little bit last week. We know that UNC went at home with him. What can you tell us about maybe next steps there for Mr. Timberlake as he is now taking his next step with that recruitment?
Yeah, so he's scheduled to take a visit to North Carolina this week. And I think what's important to note is that a dead period starts on Thursday of this week. So if players want to visit North Carolina, if they want to, you know, come see the campus and everything, they have until the 6th at noon, I'm sorry, to the 30th at noon. And then they cannot take another visit really until right before Easter. So it's March 30th through April 6th is a dead period. You can have Easter weekend to go somewhere if you really want to. And then it's a dead period, April 10th through the 13th. And then stuff starts back after that. So you're looking at really about, what, 5 or 6 days between now and April 14th when guys can take visits. So I think you'll see a lot potentially of names, you know, coming on campus, and Timberlake will be there this week. Again, a really good shooter from Townsend, another guy is using his COVID year to play an additional year of college basketball. A lot of high interest from a ton of schools, pretty much every conference, I think, gotten some interest from. We know he's done some in-home visits with other schools, but to our knowledge, North Carolina is the first visit that he set up. Indiana, Kansas, LSU, Ohio State, UCLA, UConn, Clemson, Iowa State, Maryland, Memphis, a lot of schools want him. And it's just because of that shooting ability. And again, this is not complicated. North Carolina was historically bad last season shooting from three. And right now this is among, if not the best shooter in the portal. So just from a common sense, logical standpoint, that's why you recruit someone like Timberlake. So we'll see what happens after his visit this week.
Sean, I want you to give me some analysis. I know you've watched some Timberlake video, but I don't want you just telling me that, you know, when he shoots, his follow through says bye, bye, bye. What else do you have?
So we should have a video coming out on Timberlake. I know we touched on him a fair amount last week, but was able to watch more full game videos of him against Charleston, which was the semifinal game. And they held him in check, I'd say, for the most part, after he had dropped 34 on them to close out the regular season. And, you know, I think for him, we talked about it, it's his catch and shoot ability. He's pretty explosive, good lower body strength. So he gets good, you know, good elevation on the jump shots. And the one thing you do see with Charleston, they shut down they kept him scoreless up until maybe 2 or 3 minutes in the first half. And Towson, whether it's a baseline out of bounds play, they're running him through 2 to 3 screens, curling towards the basket, or in the half court set, they're running him through elevator screens, running him from left to right, et cetera, to get him curling or open looks. And I think wherever he ends up next year, teams are going to have to do that to make sure that he is getting those open looks. But if he gets space, it's going down. He had a pretty good game against Clemson. He did force some shots earlier in the year, but catch and shoot, pull up jump shots, I think should be utilized almost out of necessity if somebody closes out too quick and he's able to do that to get in the space in the paint, because he can definitely force those. Not great at finishing at the basket, but if he gets a step and there isn't a shot blocker in the way, he can explode a lot more than you think. But I think for him, what, you know, proper expectation should be a guy that almost a better Joey Calcaterra from UConn in terms of ideally not starting, but depending on where he goes, if you're trying to compete for a championship, I'd say, you know, one of the first players off the bench that can come in, you know, potentially be a microwave off the bench. Defense, I could see teams trying to target and hunt him until he proves that he can guard, especially top shooting guards or wings, because he can stay in front of you, but he doesn't have great length. So you know, teams, players can get shots, but the defense will determine how much he stays on the floor. But I think his shot making will definitely make him a viable, you know, sixth man, seventh man off the bench that can go for, you know, maybe 10 points a game, I would say, next year. And you look at Calcaterra's stats, he played at San Diego. I got to see him in person as a freshman. You kind of say, oh, this guy, you know, he's pretty good. I didn't see him playing for a Final Four team, but you look at his numbers, he didn't have an offensive rating over 100. He didn't shoot over 40%. And you put him with some dudes, and he's a shooter that can shoot, and now he's shooting over 40%, very efficient. So once again, I think it's all who are you putting around him, and what is that offensive system designed to do to get him open looks and to get him utilizing his strengths.
Shrill, what do you say to somebody who says, oh, that dude played at Towson, how good is he really?
Yeah, I tell them to look at UConn. Their starting point guard played at ECU. No disrespect to the Pirates fans who are listening, but that is not a program known for basketball. I'll tell them to look at the fact that there aren't any top 30 recruits in the Final Four. I'll tell them to look at San Diego State's entire team. I'll tell them
the
to look
whole
at
squad, dude.
The whole team who are all senior. I look at the roster. There's one freshman on the roster.
Yeah.
It's like nine seniors, three juniors, and a freshman.
I mean, those dudes have been riding on the same bus since like 2017. I guarantee it.
Yeah, so that would be my response. And plus, he's going to be he's older. You know, he graduated high school. He graduated high school in 2017, so he's had time to remake his body to understand intricacies of basketball, probably at a higher level than someone who may be more talented but is 19 or 20. And I think that's what I would say to them. Now, obviously, I think Carolina fans are a little leery of that, considering the superpower for this year's team was supposed to be that they were so experienced and they had so much time. But that's what you look at. And if you watch the NCAA tournament, you see that it's not Johnny Five Star who is, you know, winning games. It's 25-year-old three star who's transferred twice, who's winning games. And
Marquise Noel, who I'm glad Sean missed him earlier. I love that dude.
Yeah, that's kind of where college basketball is. You know, the star player from Alabama. And you know, his last game at Alabama was 3 for 17, 3 for 18. Couldn't do anything but against a bunch of guys who nobody wanted. So that would be my response, that it might not show up in game 5 or game 10 or game 20. But when it gets to tournament time, I do think older players are better. And the goal is to win tournaments, right? So that would be my response.
All right, Cheryl, I want to get you to mention the latest name that's kind of popped up on the radar and stopped by Chapel Hill this week. Paxson Wojcik, folks may remember his last name. But again, 6'5", 200-pounder, wing player out of Brown, and has played in the Smith Center before.
Yeah, so, again, I think he had a decent game in the Smith Center. Joey pointed us out, his Twitter profile picture is like him screaming on the Smith Center floor after he yelled at somebody or something. But yeah, he stopped, but we were able to confirm he stopped by campus on Sunday. Honestly, don't know a ton much beyond that, whether or not he, you know, was just visiting and in town, whether his family was with him, if it was an unofficial or an official visit. We don't have those details. We aren't sure what North Carolina is recruiting him for, how hard they're recruiting him, if they're recruiting him. So there's a lot of questions with that one that we hope to answer. And as soon as we find those answers or find more information, we'll put it on the premium board. But I think the biggest thing is that he was on campus on Sunday.
Yeah, in that game against North Carolina 2 years ago, Paxson Wojcik had 14 points, 6 boards, 3 assists, and 36 minutes against the Tar Heels. Sean, you've seen a little bit of video on Wojcik too. Anything you want to share with us?
Well, I feel most of that came in the first half when Brown was up against UNC, and I, you know, that was my return to the Smith Center after many years of not being there. But I remember him. You know, he was playing well. He was hitting shots, and he wasn't afraid to talk back to the fans who were giving him hell during the game. You know, he really struggled to end his junior season at Brown, but he came back the senior year, and he transferred to Brown. He started at Loyola Chicago for 2 years, and then transferred to Brown. But he had a very consistent Ivy League season. Cheryl mentioned in the article, second team all Ivy League, but I think he went all of January, February, and March scoring in double figures. So he was very consistent, especially some 20-point games. But, you know, I'd say the athleticism is the main question. I think from a toughness perspective is there, and perhaps that is something that could be useful. Once again, proper expectations, proper role, probably coming off the bench, but you know, that guy is not gonna, even if he's not the best player, that's the type of guy that could be a leader or could be the one that gets everybody going. But in terms of his game, he can shoot the three, shot 40% from three in Ivy League play, a little under 40% on the year, but he's a lefty, loves to drive hard, can pull up, get to the basket. He's not going to blow by anybody, but he's got good height, good strength. And we'll definitely be interested to see where he ends up. But, you know, his dad, Doug Wojcik, longtime coach. You know, for me, it's kind of a fun story just because when I was 8 or 9, was going to Navy basketball camps and had his dad yelling at me for, you know, to get down lower in my defensive stance when I was doing drills. And I've run into him. I actually ran into him, you know, when he was watching his son Paxton play in the Under Armour circuit years ago, and when he's been recruiting for Michigan State.
And he told you your stance was still garbage, didn't he?
He did. That's why I was, yep. You know, nothing changed, unfortunately. But, you know, from a personality standpoint, when I first heard it, I was like, he's not, from a talent perspective, I'm not sure if what he can do at the UNC level, but from a personality standpoint, maybe that is the type of guy that you take as a grad transfer that comes in off the bench, but you know, he's getting in everybody on a daily basis. So it'll be interesting just to see where things go with the two of them, but we do know what Hubert likes to do. And that's really pit two guys against each other and try to push, you know, push one to commit. We've seen that with transfers and recruiting over the last 2 years.
For sure. Sherelle, something that we've kind of danced around here, but being just the pattern and the timeliness and the timeline of the way things have gone, you know, you see a bunch of guys leave the UNC program and then nobody's coming in. And it's because of, you know, guys just have to check things out. They want to visit. They want to talk to coaches and build relationships, et cetera, et cetera. But for fans who might see this and say, well, Timberlake's not a five-star guy. He didn't have, you know, 30 points a game last year. Can you help us understand how North Carolina is going to look to fill these five roster spots? And, you know, maybe the fact that not every guy is going to be an All-American type and the fact that they're all going to have different skill sets they bring to the table. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Honestly, I think UNC is still figuring that out to some degree. They kind of, so I'm sorry, my examples have been so long lately, but like when you create a TV show,
there's some Dick Wolf storytelling coming in right here. Go ahead.
They'll say, well, I know that no matter how many seasons we have, I know that in season five, I know how the series is going to end because this is going to happen and this is going to happen. So they have it kind of plotted out. They just don't know how many seasons it's going to take to get there. So I think that's what the UNC staff is kind of doing. Like they kind of know in general what they want and kind of the pieces that they want. But, you know, if a certain player has one skill and he meets that need, then maybe they don't need player X who they were recruiting over here. So they go to player Y instead. So I think a lot of it can pivot based upon who they actually get. And, you know, we'll kind of see what happens. And the thing is, like, this is kind of a marathon. Like it's a sprint to have the meetings and figure out who's staying and who's going, but bringing them in is a little bit slower just because, as we've talked about ad nauseum on here over the last 2 or 3 years, you don't want to fill all five of your spots by April 1st. And then, you know, Johnny Five Star, who loved you in high school but didn't get an offer, says, hey, I'm in the portal and I want to come this time. And then you filled up your five scholarships and you don't have room for them. You know, obviously the Dawson Garcia signing didn't work out the way UNC wanted. But again, at the time, if you look at the plan, it was great the way it worked out because he entered the draft and entered the portal and then didn't make a decision until like June that he wasn't going to go into the draft and then waited another month. And the only reason that North Carolina has scholarships is because they were patient and they didn't jump at everything that they saw in the portal immediately. So it's a nice balance of being aggressive with guys and saying, you know, we want you to visit, all that good stuff. But also, you know, kind of having your eye over your shoulder a little bit, seeing what else is coming into the portal. So they're trying to balance that.
So, by the way, Sherelle, what is this pod's official stance on player X versus Johnny Five Star?
I like Johnny Five Star a little bit better. He, as you would say, has that dog in him. Uh-huh. And most of the time that I've seen him play, he's been efficient.
Feel like he's more of a program fit too.
I do.
Okay. All right. Good to know. Sean, what's up?
Program fit. So you mentioned Dawson Garcia, and I do think that is a good example. And obviously, in hindsight, wasn't a great fit already taking Brady, but I think we alluded to that even as that was happening. And I think that's what the one thing that UNC needs to be careful with right now. There's a lot of players transferring out because you brought in. You know, you had the freshman class, sophomore class, and then you had the Iron Five that wasn't going to give up a lot of minutes. In addition to how Coach Davis has managed the team in terms of a bench, and now you still have some guys returning, Trimble, Washington, et cetera, that will most likely be coming off the bench. So you're going to add some key starters. But I think, once again, the best teams, and we're seeing that right now in the Final Four, the teams that are in the Elite Eight Final Four, they're going kind of eight deep. You know, there's not a lot of guys. And I think you need to, if you have 12 talented guys, that creates a little bit of discomfort slash maybe some lack of chemistry with people thinking they should be playing, versus if you have some defined roles. And I think that goes back to the Dawson piece, where probably didn't need him when you got Armando and Brady. You maybe need a guy that is fine coming off the bench, et cetera. I think they need to be careful of that, and just in terms of how they're shaping it, even if somebody more talented does come up later, how does that fit from a chemistry standpoint, and how does that fit just trying to, you know, manage expectations, all the outside voices, et cetera, that UNC was dealing with this year.
All right, Sean, you're going to get the last official question before we wrap this show. And mainly just because the host loves to force you into player comps, but if you could kind of give an example of what the perfect transfer portal signee for North Carolina would look like right now. And again, there's plenty to pick from because they've got five gaps on the roster. So if you could kind of describe to our listeners and our viewers what that, I guess, your prototype transfer portal signee right now would look like, who is it, and what's your explanation behind it?
Well, you made that a little easier than where I thought you were going of coming up with some other transfer names, which I'm happy to do next podcast. And you can hold me to that one. But in terms of positions, I'd say two, and these two guys are in the Final Four, so they won't be coming to UNC next year. But I think one from Miami, you have Jordan Miller, who has always been, in my mind, that type of guy is a prototypical stretch four. 6'7", maybe would have been a traditional three a while back, but he can guard up. But more importantly, he's catching the ball on the perimeter, can attack off the dribble, and can shoot it, and truly is stretching the floor versus somebody that is a little more stationary or maybe having trouble defensively guarding some of the quicker guys. So that type of player, that 6'7", 6'8", but a guy that can put it on the floor and shoot. And
he also, Sean, I'm sorry to interrupt you, he did not miss a shot against Texas. Free throw, field goal, nothing. So I don't know who's keeping score at home, but to me, 100% seems pretty good. Go ahead.
No, it's not too bad. And it felt like he didn't miss in that second half against UNC either. But the other guy, Florida Atlantic, John L. Davis, I mean, he is a, you know, Gary, Indiana. He is just built like a tank, but he can shoot it as well. And he's kind of that junkyard dog that we've talked about, but he's got the strength to bully people, and he's got the athleticism to really get by people, create on his own. And when you're going up against him, forget that it's Florida Atlantic, he's going to have an athletic mismatch against the guy that he's guarding. And it's been, for the most part, a long time since UNC has been able to say that. So if you're able to get, and it doesn't have to be at the two, it could be at the three, but if you're getting a guy that is kind of physically dominant but isn't an outside liability, sign him up. And that's why, you know, I'm going to be rooting for a Miami Florida Atlantic championship game so I can watch those two guys go at it.
You're just a South Florida honk. Go ahead, Trill.
And to Sean's point, again, Jordan Miller did not start at Miami. He started at what we would consider a mid-major, George mm-hmm. Mason. So again, you know, just because someone is at George Mason or Townsend or what school to always use, Siena or wherever they are, Siena, doesn't mean that they can't play basketball. It just means that maybe they didn't get, you know, a chance to play at a higher level school, or it means they got rapidly better over the course of their career. And Jordan Miller now did something to, like you said, Joey, it's only been done like once ever in the NCAA tournament today. So just keep that in mind when you're talking about guys who are playing at a lower level. Like, Carolina is not too good to have some of these guys come in and play for them. They're not.
Yeah, and to everybody who's listening, I mean, pay attention to what Sherrill and Sean are saying here. I mean, just because the Tar Heels are not in the Final Four doesn't mean there aren't things that you can kind of pay attention to and look at, not necessarily some of the players themselves, but look at their skill sets, look at their traits, look at how they fit within the team, and look at what they bring to the floor. I think that might actually help as you're watching North Carolina go through this process. All right, boys. And, 2 cents time.
There's no Duke. There's no UVA. There's no Kansas. There's no Alabama. You know, I think at least for me, those were the teams I was rooting against. So, you know, the Big East, it's nice to see UConn back in the Big East. But you know, it seems like yesterday I was watching Hurley at the City of Palms Classic, storming up and down the sidelines in some of those games, and what he's put together. Although I think watching UConn, between myself and Terrell continuing to talk about the Jordan Hawkins recruitment or lack thereof, just because that shooting stroke is so pure, and what he brings to the game. But yeah, I think it'll be an interesting few weeks, and it's already started. But you know, who can UNC bring in? And hopefully those are the pieces that can combine with RJ, with Armando, with whoever else is returning. And next March we can be talking about UNC in these matchups versus another disappointing season.
Yeah, who knows? And all these Final Four teams are fun for different reasons. I mean, you guys mentioned UConn. I mean, Sanogo's fun to watch. Shrill and I were talking before the show came on tonight. Like, they're really, really balanced. And
I mean, I don't know if San Diego State's fun to watch, but they're tough and they win.
They're tough. So. They're like, if you like to watch some brawlers, those dudes are some brawlers. And they don't back down from nothing. But Shrill, got anything for our 2 cents before we get out of here?
No, I'm just mad with how today went. So if you want to enjoy San Diego State and whatever that is, the basketball that San Diego State plays, you know, cool.
Tony Bennett with bigger dudes.
I forgot Creighton in that list of teams UNC fans would probably be rooting against.
No, hang on, Shrill. I'm going to save you here for a second.
Okay. All right.
There's very few people listen to this show that are going to be sad for Creighton, and we understand. But to your point, Shrill, they're actually a fun watch this year. If you can take the name off the jersey, they're a fun watch. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, this Final Four, I'm going to hate watch it just because I don't know. Just outside of UConn, just the style of basketball, like, just it's just not there. Like, I know people like rooting for Miami, but I don't care about the ACC outside of Carolina. So I mean, I know everybody else does, but it's just, I don't know. Give me the Lakers and the Celtics in the finals every year. I want big brands, big names. I don't like Cinderella. And maybe this because I grew up, you know, in the Carolina family and going to Carolina. But I would much prefer last year's Final Four, even if Carolina wasn't in it.
Yeah, the little engine that could story is great for the lead up. But then when the game comes, you want to see haymakers. You want to see heavyweights. And I think that's understandable, Shrill. I think it's absolutely understandable. And, you know, you don't want to see you're not going to see the smooth Final Four, because as we've said all year, I don't think anybody in college basketball this year was really any good. You didn't have those marquee teams. And the ones that were assigned to be marquee teams turned out to be not great tournament squads. And Sean, to your point earlier, I'm not even rah-rah Miami. It's not that I love Miami. I just like to throw a two-finger salute to the guys that touted the Big Ten and the SEC and the Big 12 all year. Go ahead, dude.
Yeah, well, I didn't even touch on the Big Ten, but we know my feelings towards that. I mean, yeah, to Shrill's point, I don't think we want a VCU Butler Final Four and then a UConn Butler championship type game. But I do think, you know, UConn Miami should be pretty high level. And, you know, Florida Atlantic, I kept thought they were going to fold against Kansas State, just given what Noel was doing and some of the shots they were hitting. And they kept coming back and coming back. So, you know, they're a tough team, well coached, but you know, we'll see. And once again, I'm just glad the teams I mentioned are not in it. So we'll be watching Davis and Miller and you know, rooting for those Florida schools.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, Shrill talked about hate watching. At least North Carolina fans can hate watch for different reasons, right? You can hate watch because of the style of basketball that's there, not because you're hate watching certain schools or certain coaches or whatever. Boys, anything else you want to add before we get out of here? All right. Singing two heads, shake Noah real hard. I appreciate it. We didn't know how long the show was going to be, and we almost made a full hour out of it. So I'm thankful for you guys contributing what you bring every week. Shout out to those folks who tuned in and listened tonight. We're glad for you guys for stopping by. I hope you continue to do so. Special thanks to Johnny T-Shirt for sponsoring, to John Siegley for producing. But until next time, for Sean Moran, for Shrill McMillan, I'm just Joey Powell. This has been Coast to Coast Podcast on InsideCarolina.com. We will talk to you guys very, very soon.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.